But that's why I didn't put it on, because I didn't watch it.
Fair, fair. We should not be putting shows we did not watch on our lists. Hello and welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton. With me today is Andy.
Hi, I'm dying.
And Duncan.
We all are.
We're all dying in the Sylvia Plath Tibetan philosophy sense.
Yeah, I've got the double whammy of my microphone got stolen and I've been over drinking last night heavily.
I was wondering about euphemism. No euphemism at all.
Nope. Okay. No euphemism, yeah.
Well, speaking of alcohol-related brain damage, we are going to be talking about our picks for last year.
Yeah. This is our third. I hear it's
a wacky
show.
One. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the thing that shocked me. I remember we only started doing it recently, but I guess 2023 just feels a really long time ago. So
I mean, a lot certainly has happened. Like, it was basically a response to our switch into a monthly format. And I think it's always been a way of us sort of just sort of celebrating the best of the previous year. Mm-hmm. The way we've done it is traditionally sort of 5 picks each, 5 points for the first pick, 4 points for second, going down to 1, etc.
Shows the venerable quarter to three system. Yeah.
Yeah. Shows ranked by cumulative scores, number of votes being the first tiebreaker, and then highest individual score second. And it works reasonably well. We get some tiebreakers which are unbreakable, in which case I just break them on vibes or a dice roll as last year. This time I'm just going to break them on narrative, whatever makes the best link from one to another in my view. But I was looking at my sort of intro from last year, and the big thing I talked about was how more than ever it felt like there are so many anime shows every year that we have to wade through that it's becoming overwhelming, and so that finding good shows feels tougher than ever before. So, and then I had a moment where I thought, wait, do we actually have more shows than we used to? And so I went and found out, did we? Just before we get rolling, I have a quick little bit of a trivia about the number of shows we've been getting these over the past decade.
Can I just have a clarification, please, there, Ben?
Yeah.
When you say the number of shows,
mm-hmm.
is that the number of shows that we have watched, or is it the number of shows that have come out?
Number of shows available to stream in English during their broadcasting year. This year, for instance, Andy, there have been 190 shows over the 4 seasons.
About right.
And that is a lot. And before that, it was 189. 2023 was 201. 2022, 179. 2021, 191. 2020, strangely enough, only 144. 2019 was 160. And then, from out of nowhere, it was 196 in 2018, 193 in 2017, 194 in 2016. And then down to 155 in 2015. So the interesting thing about the 10 years we've been doing this isn't actually the busiest it's been. The busiest period was actually 2016 to 2018. I just picked it one of the years and I went and just saw how many shows I actually liked then. There wasn't actually that many shows I thought was good. And so what seems to have happened is basically back in 2016, a little film called Your Name came out and suddenly, oh shit, we gotta get some anime out there. We have to, anything we can license goes out. And so anything they could license went out. It did. There was no quality control. It was just every single show they could get. Lots of shovelware to take a video game thing. Whereas the post-COVID anime boom actually seems to be organic. Subscriber numbers and interest in things like Google Trends seems to be rising along with the number of shows that are getting broadcast. And so I'm in the strange place where I think we're actually in what seems to be a sustainable anime boom, where you actually have the number of the interest rising along with the number of shows that is being outputted. When I did my long list for this year, I had 29 shows I liked. That's just 15% of the 190 which were available, which is tiny. That's way better than back in 2010 when there were only 9 shows I liked at all, and none of which I consider anime might be in a good place.
I mean, it's hard to say. Like, I've heard rumblings of another bubble, but it's hard to know how much of that is coming from the business side versus how much of that is there is kind of an astroturfing phenomenon where people are not really watching all the shows that get put out. I don't know. It does seem like people are really engaged. I talk to people randomly about Frieren all the time, and they know what that is. And it wasn't the case that 10 years ago, if I was watching a fantasy anime, anyone would know it by name, let alone what it was about. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a factor in your data stuff because I pirate all my shows and I only watch about 4 to 6 things a season like clockwork. So I do wonder how much of it is back when Jeff and John were a bit more engaged. But nevertheless, you've stepped up in terms of volume of shows in recent years too. So
Google Trends is not a particularly reliable metric, but it does show that when people search for their torrents, though, they will search with that sort of stuff gets picked up as well by that particular big dragnet. And so it does seem like there is an organic increase in anime, and it's not just that the amount of shows has increased, it is that the demand has increased too. But let's get on to some of those shows. It's broken down into 7 tiers: three-way tie for 7th, three-way tie for 6th, two-way tie for 5th, a single 4th, two-way tie for 3rd, and then 1st and 2nd. So let's get going with our three-way tie for 7th.
Yeah.
Which is Turkey, Takapi, and Ave Muzika.
3 shows that no one else watched, except for the person voting for them.
Oh, no, I think everybody watched Takapi, didn't they?
I didn't watch Takapi.
I did as well.
I suspected.
So why don't we start with that, Andy, since it's the only show 2 of us have watched?
I think it came in and it came as quite as a shock, I think, to a lot of the general discourse of that anime was a bit of a shock. But as a fan of Tizen 5 stuff, I was really happy to see it so beautifully, lavishly animated. And I thought that, yes, it has its downfalls. It has a few problems. But overall, I thought that it's a very interesting story that is well told, and even though it's intensely depressing and dark, it still has a few tiny little slivers of light that makes the sort of even more dramatic and sad parts really hit hard. It's not perfect, which is why it's 5th, but I thought it was really good.
Yeah, the fact that you say it's not perfect, Andy, I think is something it would appreciate, because the way it ends is not perfect. Their lives are not perfect, and there's an appreciation of both their flaws and the good things they've managed to find despite that. And I think it kind of celebrates the flaws in human nature as well as the beauty of it. And it was in my long list. It was one of the shows which I genuinely thought I will come back and watch this at some point. I think it was beautifully crafted with a lot of care, and I'm glad that it found an audience.
Yeah, and also I just don't think anime is wanting to tackle these sort of issues of domestic violence, of bullying. It's moved away from that quite a lot.
To a degree.
No, you don't think so?
No, we had previous year, we had DDD as one of our selections.
Yeah, but I think that's the point. My point is that we get fewer stuff like DDD, like Takapi, and that's why it's interesting. Like, the last one I could think that even tries to tackle child domestic violence is Erased, and that was good up until the ending, which was absolute horseshit. It tries to wrap it up in a bubble that has a good ending. Whilst I like that DDD doesn't have good endings. And the only other time I can think of that is fucking Devilman Crybaby. I don't know if you watched that anime.
Yeah.
That was great. But, you know, you don't get That's not what anime is doing these days. It's not interested in telling you a story that is different. It just wants to tell you the kind of same story packaged up in a different vibe.
I mean, obviously, we know the most well-known story is that someone gets sent back into the medieval ages by a glowing bowling ball and relive their ancestors' lives. And so, Ben, why don't you tell us about one of the most typical anime of the year, Turkey, Time to Strike?
I don't know if they're ancestors. I think that they're just, they exist in the same in the same area. No, I usually don't like to game my end-of-the-year lists. I like to, if ranking my top five anime produces a pretty boring outcome, I try to live with that and accept that I am boring. But in this case, I did have to put Turkey on there because it was just such an instance of me taking a risk with a show that didn't really stir me except like, oh, it's a sports anime and it's an anime original. And getting something that, even if I think it was ultimately less than the sum of its parts, was definitely the sort of inventiveness and ambition that I want to see in my anime. I have a bunch of awards, that one-off awards that I'm giving out. And this is the Yoshitoshi Abe Foundation Award for Innovative Anime-Only Premise is awarded to Turkey.
It's good.
The idea that that these characters, this bowling team of just people who say they're friends but are not friends, get thrown back in time where they discover a like poor local samurai family getting oppressed by the cruel lord, and how each of them kind of meets their own doppelganger in a different time period and really comes to terms with what they see as their own failings and what they feel they need to grow, and then where it goes from there. And there were times where I was like, there's not enough bowling in this time traveling bowling anime. But for the most part, I thought it had some actually stupendous moments of character work. And it definitely made me forgive the endless bickering, infighting that can be so common in female friend groups in anime, where, as I said, these people aren't really friends. They just all have the same hobby and are conflict adverse. So just seeing that, seeing it in action, the willingness to entertain the premise, the willingness to not over explain, you know, the mechanics of time travel or the butterfly effect. Even just they all go back and they go back again, and the idea that it's not necessarily about gaming the rules of the time travel, but it's about, you know, finding a moral stance, and even just discovering that like other people have traveled before them and have already affected the timeline, and how that gives them a permission structure just to try to fix history, to try to fix their own hyperlocal history in a very Zombieland Saga except better sort of way. I don't know. I like it. I think I've given away a lot of what makes it a fun ride just talking about it now. But yeah, at the same time, you're not going to remember it because it just presents as something so rote. And the way it continually challenges itself to grow and to present new ideas and to not necessarily be embarrassed that it is kind of a dorky show with an annoying main character that is ultimately about bowling in history, two of the dullest topics, which is, I guess, why I like it. So, no, I couldn't not put it on my list.
To go from there to a show where perhaps people could do with being a bit more conflict averse, my fifth choice was Bang Dream Avi Musica. This is one of three shows no one else was watching in my top five, but at least I have the comfort of knowing that Andy's going to have to watch this because he backed the wrong horse in our anniversary show.
I think Ben pussied out. I still think that.
The thing is, I think you're probably going to hate it, which is sad, because I think music shows are like the media they're concerned with. Like, they need a sense of their own conviction. They need to believe in what they're trying to execute. There's a commitment to a particular idea that worse shows lack. And I think that can mean, because they're so committed to that one idea, if you're not in on that idea, you will totally bounce off it. The good thing, though, is that commitment isn't a pretension. It's not a coat of chrome to add a luster to something that lacks it. It's the bones of the thing. And the one little thing I'm doing with my shows this year is to avoid repeating myself from our end of season shows. I'm going to talk about where they sit in my all-time lists, because Avi Mushiko and its sort of double A-side, My Go, now sit in my own personal list behind only Review Starlight when it comes to music shows.
Oh, wow.
It's like, it's this really strange mix of structural ambition and messy bitches. Or to put it in a more simpler way, it's opera. I personally reach for Philip Glass's Akhenaten as like this wonderfully bombastic but also incredibly formal piece of music. And just like that, it's certainly not a welcoming first listen. Whereas Review Starlight is Queen banging hit after hit out at the height of its powers, taking the drama of opera and sort of transmuting it into a form that is easy to invest in. This can be a bit cold, and it can be a bit abstract because it does not have an easy to relate to set of characters. But it's still, it has exemplary plotting, and I'm very glad that this is a list of favourites, not of recommendations, because like, it's not a show I would necessarily recommend to people, but it is a show that I love. I feel a certain amount of pressure to advocate for the shows I like when we do this cast, because we're obviously not just talking to ourselves, we're talking to an audience. We want to say why I love this thing, and you should like it too. Whereas I'm like, nah, this is probably just one for me. Everyone else should probably stay clear of this.
I mean, it's got an audience, man. It's got a huge audience. It's very popular. I didn't like Go. I didn't like Bang My Go. And so,
So on to things which people did like, but other people didn't like. An equally divisive choice. We've got Andy's choice of City.
Yeah, man. I will never understand Ben's hate for City. It's beautiful. It's well animated.
Busy.
I love that it's busy. I love the busyness. I love that it's its own unique style. Love how it's different and strays from Nichijo. I think it's good. I think it's great. I think it's got bits of moments of funniness, moments of moroseness, all packaged up into one lovely little bundle. And I hope for a season two. I don't think we're going to get one though. What a delightful little show. I really enjoyed it.
Why don't you believe it'll get to season two, Andy? Because I felt like it was...
expensive.
It's got plenty of material still to adapt. It was very well received, and it seemed to be fairly popular as well. Like, that seems to be everything you'd want to get a new season.
You're right. I'm hoping maybe it will. I don't know. I mean, it's also interesting how the mangaka also is very heavily involved in the production of this show.
And them being happy is an important thing in getting a second season as well.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily their happiness. I think it's a lot to do with budget and what KyoAni wants to animate next.
Yeah. KyoAni has its pick of projects, so...
Yes, this is true. Yeah.
And like the fact that KyoAni's got Ruby Dragon coming up is shocking. I can't believe that's happening. That's very exciting.
They're just getting all your faves, Andy.
Yeah, they really are. But I'll be happy for a second season. But I feel like KyoAni rarely does. You know, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. And if it did get a second season, maybe just like Call of the Night season two, you might actually speak of it in higher praise than you seem to speak about the first one, which is because Call of the Night is Ben's fourth choice.
Again, I wanted to like pretend that I don't game my list, but... with this one, I really, there are so many season twos I watched this year, and I really didn't want it to be dominated with, you know, Dress Up Darling season two and Pokemon Concierge season two and Apothecary Diaries season two. So I picked the one that I felt was, I had something that was the most standalone to say about it, and that was Call of the Night, because I remember when I talked about it initially, I said that it was an interesting case of a bunch of mid-season flashbacks that I thought killed the momentum, but then they actually found a plot device that that is powered by these flashbacks, and the payoff and the kind of character study that resulted of a secondary character while still kind of expanding out this rich cast into the group of vampires who are the spectators for Ko and Nazuna to be falling in love or not falling in love, as the case may be. Mm. When I talk about anime that I'm excited about next, this current season that we're in, the winter 2026 anime season, I am going to reference both City and this City, because I feel that like the busyness that City wants is executed better in You and I Are Polar Opposites. And also the idea that a fast-paced anime romance where we don't spend a whole season waiting for them to hold hands, let alone kiss, is represented excellently in You and I Are Polar Opposites. But at the same time, Call of the Night, like, they're on a time limit. Ko has a year to fall in love with Nazna, and if he doesn't, he never will, because of the rules of vampire bullshit. And so putting a time pressure on this romance and having the characters, kind of deal with, are we going to force it? We can't force it. Like, what are we going to do? And discovering that falling in love is largely about looking within yourself and seeing what you like about someone. And are you even capable of allowing like to transform into love? I liked Call of the Night. Plus, beautiful, just great music.
Yeah.
All that creepy nuts and the beautiful purple and chartreuse nightscape that they splash everywhere. Mm. I like it. And it's also just nice to have a show about adults. And granted, most of these adults are vampires, but yeah, the fact that they like can stay out late and drink and, mm-hmm, you know, buy stuff. That's not really the case when it's teen focused romance comedy. I hope you get a chance to watch it soon, yeah, Duncan.
I'm looking forward to it escaping High Dive Jail and appearing on Netflix Jail.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, and while we're waiting around in Netflix Jail, something else you could choose to watch, Ben, would be Orb on the Movements of Earth, which is my number four show this year. Orb was a show I very nearly bounced off because of its sensationalist start, and I know that's basically something which turned you off it. And
unfortunately,
in my sort of anime canon, it is very closely bracketed by Vinland Saga. And I think ultimately what pushes it ahead of Vinland Saga for me is the nature of that canon itself. My favourite historical shows are things like... and I say historical with sort of air quotes when I say it, are things like Heike Monogatari.
Yeah.
And they often use events to ask questions about our sort of common humanity, be it about grief, dignity, or whatever. But the best examples, and I think Orb is one of them, have a sense of what it is like to be alive in a very specific moment in history. On the surface, this is a show about heliocentrism, but in fact, it's far more concerned about how that idea is transmitted than the idea itself. It follows a chain of humanity through time, like showing how people change and how they change those around them. It chronicles how communication and curiosity can persist even when tested, and how information is not a pure and objective thing, but influenced by who it passes through. And more than all that, it cares deeply about the ability of the written word to transcend time, because this chain of individuals I talk about is not unbroken. It's fragmented, but it's linked by these bridges of words that outlive their authors. And in a time where the world is not seeming at its best, it's Orb's belief in like the potential of humanity to slowly uplift itself is something I value a lot. And you maybe you will never watch it, Ben. But truly,
it's on my list. But
yeah, we've discussed the list before, and we know what it's like. But what are we to do with lists if not to go to the fifth entries in this particular one, and that is Medalist and Dan Da Da Dan. It's probably best to go to Andy to talk about why Dan Da Da Dan was his third choice.
Dan Da Da Dan, I'm a big fan of the manga, and what I think is great about the anime, it makes me recontextualize the manga and has their voices, their animations, the characteristics, the vibe of like the general comedy elements, the bickering, like all that stuff, I now read in the manga and I can appreciate more. I think the manga is good, but it has way too much time spent fighting people. And I know Ben had some complaints on season two with the evil eye fight lasting like two episodes. But I promise you, the manga, it lasted for ages. And I was also worried about adapting such a beautifully drawn manga into the animation. Mm. Obviously, some quality is going to be lost, but I actually thought that focusing on the movement of the characters and especially how Turbo Granny runs and stuff is an absolute fucking delight. Science Saru just knows how to do animation, especially like fast movements, really, really well. And then it also knows how to sort of get the smaller movements down on pat too when it's like intimate bits between the two main characters. I just really loved it, and I'm really excited for the season three because that is my favourite arc.
I think we all did enjoy parts of it, yeah. Even if it wasn't consistently great for us. It's interesting that you brought up a Devilman Crybaby earlier, Andy, because I always think of the running in that whenever I see Turbo Granny run. It reminds me a lot of that, and that was Science Saru too, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. For me, I was interested to see how, without Yuasa at the helm, what they would do. Would they do anything different? Mm. Would they change, like, would it get, like, worse? And I'm happy to say that it hasn't. Mm. It's actually maintained a really good quality, really high animation budget, and I just love Dandadan, and I'm very excited for season three to come.
And I know your favourite episode of that was about someone and dancing and some of the tragedy surrounding that.
So that's a great example of how it's different in the manga, and the anime does it better.
Mm-hmm. It's good when anime adaptations can see a potential in a manga panel series and see what movement and the synchronicity of audio and visuals can do. Speaking of...
Yeah. Off you go, Ben. Medalist.
I have always loved how anime can get me into a sport that I don't really care about, just by virtue of grounding it in very strong character emotionality and drama, and in the progress as we watch characters develop and as we kind of cathartically witness the personal and physical growth that's necessary to become great at something. And it was actually funny this year, the tryouts for what will eventually be the Olympic skating team happened in my city, and like I had a friend bring someone in, and I tried and failed to get them to watch Medalist, but Medalist, it Inari is such a cool little girl, and she is disadvantaged, but not so much that you know it's going to be magic bullshit that will get her into the top ranks. And I'm not crazy about the 3D skating, but it does seem to be using the tools to be able to show the complexity and knife's edge of skating routines and how so much stuff just rests on a, to use the obvious comparison, a knife's edge as they're skating around and trying to, you know, run up their score. And there's enough explanation of how a score is calculated that you feel like you know what's going on, but enough is not explained, so it still seems kind of magical and mysterious who's going to win until they do the great reveal. It sucked to have to wait so long in this season for the sequel to land, and it's nice to see that the show is headed where I think it's going to head, and Inari is kind of integrating into her cohort and seeing that there are bigger challenges than just being the best skater in the novice A bracket, that there's a long lifetime of challenges that she's going to face, and watching her specific personality adapt to that. But even in the early parts of the original season, where she's just digging up worms to bribe the skating rink owner to let her skate in off hours and not tell her mom, I love Medalist. It's one of the best sports animes I've watched in a while, as opposed to what Turkey was, which was a misdirection. This just is fully about its sport, and it just makes skating seem awesome, and the people who do it seem like superstars, like shonen protagonists.
I think its CG works partly because of, as you say, Ben, how important perfection is in these routines.
Yes.
When I think of the best examples of CGI in anime, I still go back to Land of the Lustrous, and there's and these crystalline women and the, well, these crystalline creatures, then they're not women. So that's a whole plot, part of its plot. They are, by their nature as well, perfect beings, like hard edges and moving in that way. And so the slight uncanny valley that CGI can provide is something which it can play into. And the same happens with Medlis. Unlike something like Wannadance, where although it is also dealing with people or expressing stuff with medium, because it's a freestyle of event and doesn't have this technical aspect being observed, it dies on the vine, whereas Medalist visuals help sell its narrative. It was on my list. It's a show I'm looking forward to seeing more of this season.
Yeah.
Speaking of things where I which are sort of wintry themed, we've got Andy's second choice, Xander. I think I was probably slightly harsh on last time. I've sort of come round to feeling it is better than I may have expressed in the past. But let's go to someone who will unalloyedly sing its praises.
I didn't want to do recency bias, but Sanders really. But again, another science savvy project. Fuck, I should probably stop doing that. I have a particular bias towards one studio, clearly. I just love it. A show that really hits body dysmorphia in a way that I'm like, I felt that and understood it. And it just was really, it was a very good series, beautifully animated, well produced, by a mangaka who I love, Paruhi Tagaki. Like, mm-hmm. Really interesting, strange, weird, constantly makes you question everything. I think it's incredible, and if you can get past the premise of the fact that it's about Santa, there's a lot there. It's not really about Santa. It's more about the innocence of children and our society's desire for youth. And to hold like youth like it's a precious object, when really they're trying to keep the water in their hands, but it's always slipping. But they feel like they've got the way. It's fascinating. It's wonderful. I love it. It's weird. It's great. Fucking top marks all the way around, and it's why it's my second favorite. Mm.
It's always a mark of a great show where it can take what can seem like a quite an extreme scenario, but make it very relatable. And I think Xander succeeded in that extremely well. And we're going to get more Paruhi Tagaki later this season in March, where we finally get the end of Beastars.
Well, is it the end of Beastars?
It is.
I don't know. I think it's like another like part. It is one of the parts of the end of Beastars. If it's the last one, I'll be interested and happy, but I could be wrong.
Then we come to the number three, which is shared between two shows, one of which is Andy's first pick, Dress Up Darling, and one of which is my first pick, season two of Shoshimin. I'll go first here, because the only mystery show I place higher than Shoshimin's second season is Mushishi.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not because it's better, because as far as I'm concerned, this season stands basically shoulder to shoulder in terms of quality with Mushishi. It's simply because across its full breadth of seasons, Mushishi is a more consistent show. Because the first season of Shoshimin was good, but it wasn't outstanding. But this is, to me at least, an absolutely outstanding work, which is why it's my favourite this season. Both shows are centered on this human compulsion to find meaning in our world. They share this sort of understanding that it's very human to seek a cause to everything, mm-hmm. put a name to blame our woes on. And what raises them above other mystery shows is that they understand the futility of that action and the compulsion that can also drive people to it. I've said before that I think the secret to a good mystery show is that as an audience, we often realize what's going on a moment before the protagonist. And that gives us that warm feeling of, oh yeah, ain't we clever? And I think part of the reason that both these shows work is that their protagonists are kind of outsiders. They're kind of people who don't understand people as well as most people. Inumushishi Ginkgo lives this itinerant lifestyle, and he has a very reserved nature and lost memories, and these contrivances separate him from society and means he understands these weird bugs better than he understands people. And so much of the drama comes from him trying to understand people. And Choshimin's the same. It's always more important to understand the people involved in a mystery than it is the mystery itself. It has like this two-way traffic. It's not just a single viewpoint. It's two outsiders sort of trying to understand each other by inference, to sort of look at how a situation is changed by one of them and understand that person a little bit more by that. Watching these two people fascinated by seeing the worst traits in each other, simultaneously being attracted to them. The bit which I loved most of it was them simultaneously trying to fake it until they made it in relationships, which was a fascinating disaster for all concerned, as they bungled through like intimacy, trying to make people happy without really understanding why. Mm. Our main protagonist, Kabato, in particular, has this wonderful sympathy for people, but very little empathy. He treats them as he wants to be treated rather than the way they would wish to. And I think that's something I really relate to, understand what people want rather than what we want. Just as with Sander being quite an extreme version of what it's trying to get across, this is quite an extreme version of this, but it makes me emphasize it all the same, and I absolutely loved it. And for me to bracket it very close to Mushishi, I hope gets across just how highly I rated it. Mm. Andy, your choice here is Dress Up Darling, which I remember you being similarly rapturous about.
Yeah, I mean, this is by far and away the best thing this year, but I really enjoyed Dress Up Darling. I was a massive fan of the manga, and I thought this did an exemplary job of like putting the manga to animated form. I don't really have enough. If you don't know what Dress Up Darling is, then I guess where have you been?
With the program nerds.
Yeah. And it's season two is beautifully animated. Beautifully animated, beautifully told. Gojo Madden is an absolutely adorable nerd. And I wanted to see, I'm really happy to see their relationship progress in an animated form like this. And I look forward to the third season if we get one, which I don't think we will. Again,
Roger, don't think we'll get a third.
Well, they had an anime original ending of season two, and I think that the popularity for the show is going to die off pretty quickly. There's no manga. There's not enough to adapt into a full series. I mean, actually, sorry, let me take that back. There is enough to adapt for a full series. However, as we all know, anime doesn't like to get past them confessing. The amount that they've got left for the confession is probably enough for a movie. I feel like if we get a movie, I'll be happy, but I love the way that it ends afterwards. The manga ends really quickly. It's very clear that the mangaka was setting up a bunch of plot lines and then had some very big health scares and then just decided to cut it instantly. And so it's got this very weird ending where you're just like, oh, that's it. It's gone. That happens in manga. It's sad how common it happens in manga, but you either get it, people lose interest, so they're like, we're just going to cancel your publication, or they get into health scares and then they stop. Mm-hmm. They stop, which is what happened in this case.
Well, this year, Andy, you're getting a anime original alternate ending to another one of your favorite romances, Kaguya Love is War, and maybe for better or worse, that's maybe what the fate of Dress Up Darling will be. Maybe, as you say, they ended with a minor anime original ending this season. Maybe it'll be a major anime original ending next season. There's nothing which says an author, if they are engaged and happy with the work which has been done on their thing, can't come back and rethink what they did. Now they've got the time and the cooperation of a staff they trust, and maybe we'll get the Dress Up Darling that the author wanted all along, and that's the best case.
That would be the best case. I don't think we're going to get it, but that would be the best case. As for Kaguya-sama, yeah, it's the anime original ending thing is weird. because they've got some really good arcs after where they stopped. I quite like the Ice Kaguya arc quite a bit. New anime ending, I don't know what they're going to do. They're probably just going to adapt the manga ending, but then just because it's like a weird thing where they look back in the past or something, isn't
it? Yeah, could well be.
Yeah, so I don't think it'll be an anime original
skip
ending.
Skip to the end.
Yeah, I think they're just going to skip to the end for a bit of closure, which again, strange.
And now we come to our second choice. We had two things which both had 8 points, but this comes second as being a dint of two people's second choice show. This is Apocalypse Hotel, both mine and Ben's second favourite show this season. And since me and Andy have been talking for a bit, Ben, why don't you take us away with this wonderful anime original?
There's a lot of shows lately about the end of the world and what happens after, and not to belabor this whole idea of standing at the end of history where we know that we are a becoming, we are not in a period, we are at the cusp of something new. I enjoy when anime, as opposed to a lot of Western media, although less so, there's different tones being adopted over the past few years, but in opposition to what we see happening in, say, Fallout, which is on TV right now, Japan often is willing to highlight the ordinariness of disaster and the inevitability of life, that if you do nothing, life just continues on and things that you thought were central to your existence, to your happiness, to your community may disappear, but nothing ever really ends, to quote another piece of pop culture sci-fi media. And I like how Apocalypse Hotel deals with these subjects, both through just the literal events of its episodes, but also the mutability of time. Like, we have this unsureness of how time passes that feels very informed by the COVID pandemic. Has it been 1 year? Has it been 10 years? Has it been 2 centuries? It's not a meaningful marker of change for these characters anymore. And how we have these goofy adventures, and the fact that we reset kind of to a new or only slightly altered status quo doesn't feel like a betrayal of what happened in those episodes, but just that nothing really changes. And like, it's really us who change.
Yeah.
And when I think about this show, in addition to like the whiskey episode and the Rods from God episode, I'll always think about the penultimate one where it's just a day off and you just go and you walk and you kind of just restore your connection to the millions of little minutiae that make up your daily experience. And I have done that so often over the past year or two, where I just, if I feel lost, if I feel overwhelmed, if I feel like I have no time between now and going to work, I go outside and I walk down my block for 10 or 20 minutes. There is a sort of profound continuity of, if not pleasure, then of pleasant experience that I think that Apocalypse Hotel captures really well. And it was fun to watch Touring After the Apocalypse, which also I think has a lot of the same ideas, but nothing really captures how everything is fiercely funny one moment and supremely tragic the next moment and utterly mundane the moment after the next. And that breadth of being is, I think, best represented in what Apocalypse Hotel is trying to do. And I'm excited to see more from the creative team if they are a creative team that's going to hang together and try something else.
Yeah, it's a wonderful show. And like, the show which I compare it to most closely would be the show which, if you ask me what is my favourite anime of all time, on some days I might say The Eccentric Family. And I sort of have joked at various times that it's because they're all full of Tanuki. And
and there's a mundaneness to Tanuki for some reason in Japanese culture too.
Yeah. And as much as I joke about that, on reflection, I think it kind of is. Because, like, both of the shows use, like, a community of non-humans to sort of reflect on the absurdities of human society. Mm. Like, as you say, of the small things we take for granted and don't value, and the things that we say are important but can eventually be laid aside. And I think that outsider perspective of these people who want to be us but aren't quite us is an intriguing one. And I loved how Apocalypse Hotel was like very concerned with the enduring value of these small things, of one moment in eternity, that walk and just being present in it.
Yeah.
And how Yacho is this wonderful artificial person slowly building herself an identity. And the sort of primary conflict being that time is slowly stripping away the superficial layers of what she was, while forcing her to sort of rebuild herself on the fly, sometimes metaphorically, sometimes literally with a tank. And it's to its credit, like, that it also really got across the allure of staying as she was, that this idea that, oh, it'd be nice to be comfortable, and there's stuff to admire in her past as well, because it's an easy thing to depict changes in the inevitable and not to understand the pull of the familiar.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason I put eccentric family as higher than it is because Yasuburo is similarly trying to build himself an identity separate to his family. But what elevates it is, like, you have the force pulling him away from them also has agency. Benton is everything he loves about human society, but she's pulling him into it for her own reasons and whims, and it adds a conflict and tension that Apocalypse Hotel doesn't have. And I think that, for me, made Eccentric Family perhaps a more compelling work, but it doesn't diminish Apocalypse Hotel's framing at all. It's not trying to do the same thing. It's concentrated on just one aspect of it, and I think it basically does it flawlessly.
No, I agree. And I think Eccentric Family has a lot more of this, like, dense intersection of community and vocation and friendship and history. And Apocalypse Hotel it's much more focused on, like, work and, like, how we derive meaning from work and how work affects the world. And so it's a bit more of it's a less broad sociological take on the thing, but nonetheless compelling for it.
Then we come to our number one show, which was my third choice and Ben's first choice, and that is Ruri Rocks. I'll go first this time, because the man whose first choice it was deserves the final word. Ruri, for me, sits, like, solidly in the cute girls doing slice of life things genre. And while I enjoy things like Eurocamp and Nonno and Buri, I think they have a sense of stasis in the lives of their protagonists that really limits them. Like, characters really don't have a space to grow or change beyond archetypes. But I think Ruri had an ability to contextualize characters not just as relationships to each other, but in relation to where they are in their lives compared to each other. And I think it really elevated it above other examples of its subgenre. It obviously helped that it was ludicrously beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the point of Nonnonbiori, though. It's meant to be stuck in time.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
I talked about vocation, and I do think that maybe that is something that's grabbing me this year, is Ruri captures so much what it means to be interested in something, and the great gulf between having an interest and having a career, or having a study or a science of something. And I feel like in a lesser anime, the idea that Ruri would grow up to be a geologist would be taken as given. And I think that it actually says something enormously. One of several things that it speaks enormously well of Ruri is that even as she's obsessed with rocks, and even as she's getting co-author credit on papers, she's still like, but is this a job that I want to do? And I think too often we're allowed to think that there's this mangle of interest and passion and profit and duty to society that means that if you like something, you should inevitably try to find a way to make a living out of it. And in addition to just me being a former grad student and therefore having a lot of fondness there, I really do think Ruri Rocks talks about how, like, you kind of have to decide, like, is this something I like, or is this something that I want to do?
Yeah.
And it shows us how you can be pushed and prodded, and at the same time as you're coming up with these theories and not knowing, and even the handful of times that it's suggested, like, oh, this would be something that would be great to write a paper on. And it's like, yikes, do I want to write a paper on that? Like, that's several weeks or months of work that I will just be doing this on and not that. And so the mindfulness of how we ought to spend our time, and, like, what we're getting from it, or what we hope people, including us, will get from it. And just the beauty also. Like, it's so funny how they juice up rocks to look so fucking awesome. All these geodes and gems and sapphires and flakes of gold floating in water. Like, the Nonnonbiori citation does feel good, because Nonnonbiori's obsession with the sensory experience of summer and the overwhelmingness of green is very well reflected in Rui, with just like, you can just walk and you just look at a boring old stone and then poof, it's got some crazy purple shit in it. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Right under my nose, there's an unbelievable amount of beauty. Mm. And like, are you going to spend the rest of your life searching for that? Or is this just something that you enjoy along the way, to kind of harken back to Apocalypse Hotel once more?
Yeah, I think it had a wonderful sense of the when and where that they were, like whether it was like wandering along like this sun-drenched riverside, or like the cluttered halls of the university, or just like staring up this star-filled sky. Yeah. It was always not just a place, it was a moment. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I think a special call out goes to Nagi for being the mentor everyone wants.
Busty
and,
like, mentor.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was you or John who sang her praises as being like, when you find a hobby which you love, this person who gives you a glimpse of like not just the breadth to it, but the depth, where you can sort of these points where you can drill down and find greater understanding and the possibilities of something, not just the surface level. And the final bit of praise I'd like to throw it is that I've gone and, after having watched the series, and gone and read a bit of the comic, and it's absolutely a transformative adaptation. Like, it really takes its time to fill in the gaps between panels with actions that really build character. Like, early on, there's this scene of Rui just in a kitchen with her mum, just pestering her to buy her a crystal. Mm-hmm. In the manga, this just takes like a single page. There's not really much movement. It's just dialogue bubbles and the setting and characters just there to establish that this character is talking to the other. But in animation, we get so much about Rui's character. We get her like stamping her feet in impatience while she's pestering her mum, and wonderful moment where you get her impetuosity sort of reflected in this not being able to resist, like popping a piece of freshly cooked fried chicken in her mouth and burning her tongue. And it's just these tiny, simple bits of character building which exist between the panels of the original, like small moments, like reinforcing and enhancing a character's nature within the grander narrative. And I think it's a worthy first place, because it does what animation does best, which is those moments, I think.
Yeah. No, I agree. Andy, you should watch it.
Yeah.
I just have not had time when it came out.
It's been a busy year. That's also the thing. Like, you talk about how it's been a weaker year, but also a lot has been going on. Like, this is the first podcast in like almost 3 months where I haven't been sick and going through personal crisis. I mean, I'm still kind of going through personal crisis, but that's just life.
Yeah. Same.
As a final thing in relation to, was this a weak year or not? Mm. I decided just to have a quick look at the past, to combine my three sets of five and to basically go, okay, what was my 1 to 15 of the past 3 years? And the thing is, of my top five, Shoshimin, Apocalypse Hotel, and Ruri Rocks all make it. The only two things which are shifting them are Machiné and The Boy in Heaven, which is still the best thing I've seen in the past 3 years, apparently. And when I look at it, this is, by most accounts, a very strong year. Like, the most things which I thought were... 2023 was apparently a poor year. 2024, some standouts, but some of the worst ones as well. Whereas this was all solidly in the top half. Mm. And I think one thing we always have to remember with this is that no one has the time to watch everything, unless you're me this year. And so you will always miss some gems, and there's no completionism to it. All you can do is you can try and seek out the things which give you what you need in a moment. And I hope someone will hear one of the shows we're talking about now and think, yeah, that's exactly what I want to watch right now.
You might not have watched the gem when it came out. That gem will still be encased in time stone that eventually you can just crack open and see the beautiful gem inside that is Rui Rocks.
Then crack it open and say it was Botched Rock all along.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly my top one of the last 2 years, but I disagree that 2023 was weak. Didn't it also not have Feyren as well?
Yeah,
I think it did. Yeah, and Dangerous, Feyren, Oshinoko.
Yeah, Feyren's there.
Yeah, they're all pretty good. But
we will in a bit be talking a bit about the new season, of which third season of Oshinoko is part. And I loved the second season of that, perhaps more than the first.
Second season was great.
But I didn't see the second season when it was airing. And I just came back to it, I think, after you were talking about it one time. And so, yeah, I can do for someone else what you did for me with that. Good stuff.
Any honourable mentions that didn't pick?
I mean, so many honourable mentions.
Yeah. Let's take a break and we can come back for honorable mentions, manga awards next season.
I did a temple Duncan whilst we were recording, and then I put the sound on quietly and muted myself. So you know, when you start hearing weird gashapults, you know why. When you start hearing I really want some of them.
But truly the most accurate history anime this season.
How good Uma Musume is to its like origins.
Well, when every single thing you depict in your show is something owned by people who are exceedingly wealthy, you probably make sure you get your depictions spot on.
Yeah, I thought Cindy Gray would be on your top five.
Cindy Gray was number 9 in my list. Which is I was pretty happy that my 6, 7, 8 was Dress Up Darling, Medalist, and Takapi, and so I got a full representative of the shows which I considered the ones I would probably go back and watch in from you two. You filled out my list for me, and just behind that was Cinderella Grey, which I think. Which I enjoyed, but just wasn't quite the same tier as something like Medalist or Takapi or Dress Up Darling for me. It's still a great show, but there was a difference. I enjoyed every time I watched it, but I couldn't imagine myself going back and watching it again. And like, were there other shows? What were the other shows for you guys which you really enjoyed but didn't?
Oh,
really...
So we are actually going back into the record.
Oh yeah,
yeah. He said right, it.
Fine. Cool. For me, it was the summer that Hikaru died.
Oh yeah, that was it's on my long list as well.
Yeah, I really like it. It's a very good mystery and sort of coming of age, as well as what change, like realizing their own sexuality and all this kind of stuff in a very closed off countryside community with a really good mystery in the middle, and just some very incredibly, like, some very well done scenes that really hit to the heart of people you love dying. And I know that sounds dumb, but I feel like in this modern age, people die in media and no one gives a shit. It's just like they just blink and they're gone. Whilst this one, having Hikaru, who I don't know whether, like, did we even talk about it?
Yeah, we talked about it briefly, but not in depth, because we talked about it in one of our beginning season shows, because I never finished it, sadly. Because it was, for me, although it wasn't for you, it was part of a pack season.
No, it was. And I watched it later. I just sort of slammed it all.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the way that they deal with loss and this... Like, the story is that Hikaru goes up into the mountains and then dies and is taken over by an unknown entity who assumes his body and everything about him. Mm. And his best friend, notices. And it's this real... It really sort of threw into me, like, the question of loss, but the fact that there's still somebody there. They're trying to process this person's death, but instead is constantly reminded by this person's life because he's there, a facsimile of him in everything apart from the real person. It's
I think they did a really good job of taking this thing where when you have lose someone from your life, there's 1,001 things which remind them of you, and that every time that little thing comes up, that dregs their memory back, and you can't avoid it, and you can't control it, and it sort of got across the horror of these moments where loss can suddenly come back.
Yes, I agree. And I just think of, like, and then also the feeling of, like, supreme loneliness, even though you're surrounded by people. There's a beautiful scene where they're at a festival and, you know, he just can't handle it and
basically cries, breaks down and cries and has an argument with Hikaru. I love it. Really good.
Yeah, it sounds like a much better execution of what Anohana was trying to reach for in terms of like, what if someone really important to you dies and then they come back and you have to like re-heal all over again.
Although I would also say that Anohana doesn't have a monster and horror mixed in with it as well. Like,
no, just a Moe blob, the ultimate yeah. Lovecraftian horror. Yeah.
Truly is. But yeah, the horror stuff is so well done. It really does put me in the mind of Satoshi Kon, of like Perfect Blue, of Paranoia Agent. Just absolutely stellar. Yeah, maybe I should have put it in fifth. I can't remember.
despite being a weird... weird spelt with a Y or whatever story, it definitely is more of a psychological horror than a jump scare, though it does have some of those. But what about you, Ben? What's your sort of...
I wanted to, since you were inspired by A Quarter to the Three with this whole thing, I also yeah. like little goofy one-off awards, which I guess are my way of doing some ones that aren't really fully list worthy. I already mentioned Turkey Time to Strike getting like Innovative Anime Original Premise Award. I had the Diversity Award for Mixed Media and an Animated Work goes to My Dress Up Darling Season 2, the amount of like paper craft and claymation and hand-drawn stuff. And it's funny to have Frieren Season 2 out this season and people are just like losing their shit over the hand-drawn ED, and it's like, yeah, it's nice, but like Dress Up Darling did something completely new like that every yeah. single episode, and so it has a little bit of less of an impact for me. I mean, I like that Frieren always has an alternative animation ED, the weird like claymation blob one, and that like
I think you're 100% right there. Like, I think it was definitely more experimental than the first season, and I think that had more confidence, and that was great to see.
Yeah, I mentioned when I was talking about it at the time that it has like goofy things like the anime cosplay explainer segments.
They were
like they mentioned the person in it is a real character who can't come to their party, and she's like sad about it. They cut away to her in the like cosplay explainer segment, like crying her eyes out. I love that shit. Meta me up. I have more awards, but go ahead, Duncan.
In terms of mixed media, like the Shoshimin's OP from last season is, I think, absolutely astonishing. There's a write-up about it and sort of the wider business of making OPs and EDs in anime on a Sakuga blog, which I think it does a really good job of talking about how the directorial process of making these things is very different to the directorial process for actually making the shows themselves. And I think, like, when people talk about something like the Frieren ED, I think it's beautiful, sure, but they were doing stuff with papercraft in the second half of season one, and like it's not unusual. It's just that people haven't necessarily bumped into that. It's easy to do it in an OP or AD, but when you take the risk and do it in the actual show itself, like Dress Up Darling did, that's really worthy of note.
No, I agree completely. And one of my awards is already for Call of the Night Season 2, the fucking Kiss Already Fellowship for well-paced romance anime excellence. But another runner-up, and it's his... Again, like Turkey, where I'm grading on a curve, but most improvement from a first season that didn't really warrant a second season, but got one anyway. speaking of mixed media, the most fantastic mixed media, which is making a puppet and then blowing it up, is New Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt. It turns out that a lot of why I didn't like the first season of the show was that I felt trapped in a phone booth with two really unpleasant characters. And so I said this dozens of times already, I'm not going to belabor the point, but adding the two demon sisters, who are both really nice and normal people, and having them kind of balance out the ensemble, even if it's just an annoying like panty or stocking focused episode, they'll do cutaways and the sisters will just be like reading at the breakfast table, and they'll be like, oh, what are your plans for the day? And then it's a funny comedy cutaway, and it shows that like a good ensemble can save something that did not work as a show with only one or two focused protagonists. And there's still weird shit and there's still shit that doesn't quite work. But I it's night and day compared to how miserable I was having binged the first season of Panty and Stocking 10 years after the fact.
Yeah, that was a rough watch. Yeah.
No, I don't think anyone came out positive, and it was very funny for me to be like, I think that Panty and Stocking season 2 is actually kind of good at times, and Duncan's like, yeah, I think it's pretty good. Plus all the rules.
Yeah. Nice. Only worthy of number 22 in my list, though.
But on the list, which is good anime, I assume that there's some that didn't make it on at all, presumably. Like tried to watch Digimon or something.
Many things got... you know what? Since you've brought it up, let's go. Number 9 was, as I said, was Cinderella Grey. Number 10 was Ninkoro, which I know Jeff enjoyed, which is
oh, I couldn't stand that show.
A shaft animation, which is just a very shaft animation about ninjas getting killed repeatedly in stupid ways and lots of Yuri. Then we had 100 Girlfriends, which really, really loved you, season 2. Which was great.
Yeah, that was good.
A lot of fun. Then we had A Fragrant Flower, Blooms with Dignity, which was also great and very beautiful. Then we had City. Then we had Clever Tez. Then I had Ranma at 16. 17, Dealing with the Mikadono Sisters is easy, unlike pronouncing it. Number 18 was Pokemon Concierge. Number 19, Touring of the Apocalypse.
Wait, that shit show was above, it's above Pokemon Concierge?
Yeah, so it was good.
It was bad.
You didn't watch
it. I watched one episode.
Then I had at 20, Xander, 21, Apothecary Diaries, then 22, Panty and Stocking, 23, Shibaki, 24, Wild Last Boss, 25, A Monster Wants to Eat Tea, 26, Mono, 27, To Be Hero X, 28, Bunny Senpai, Xmas Time, and at number 29, the last show, which I considered all right, and which I liked, despite its many, many flaws, was Kulon Generic Romance, probably comes in as my biggest disappointment of where it ended up in the list compared to where
it had so much potential.
I completely disagree. I think it was excellent and it landed everything that it was fucking trying to do. Like, sometimes you guys complain about something and I just don't see it.
So
like,
what was your biggest disappointment then, Andy?
I don't know.
What were you hoping for and did not give you?
But this is
the
thing. Like, I don't watch anime hoping for something. I just watch it.
But sometimes you'll start watching the first couple of episodes will be great and then it'll drop off.
But that's different from what you were saying. I don't go into an anime going, this is going to give me this. And then when it doesn't give me that, I get upset.
I look at the visuals. I look at the visuals. I saw the retro style. I saw the setting in a location that I thought was like really exotic and that I didn't have a lot of knowledge about, and I came in with expectations for Kowloon. I think it can be ideal or idealized to try to come in without that, but I couldn't help it. There were things that I was hoping to see from Kowloon generic opera, and it was happy to confirm some of those expectations and then not really pay them off. And I with distance and with disappointment having faded, I do think it's a very interesting failure for me, but I don't think that there was any level of blind that I could have gone into this anime that wouldn't have made me feel like it was promising one thing and giving me another.
I just loved the... I forgot that it was there. I really loved the city pop vibes to it. I love the melancholy. I love, again, another show about someone being dead and then still, but not there, still being alive.
Regret and loss.
I agree that it felt like a show, and this because it was a show that needed to end because the manga's still going, so they haven't got a proper ending for it.
Mm.
Yeah, like they just gave it a weird ending, which I felt was rushed and probably not true to the source material.
I haven't read
the source material, so I couldn't comment. I think that was its only downside. But I only have one award of some, like I only have one made up award, and that is the thing that I watched that wasn't airing this year that I really, really loved, and that was Tokyo Godfathers. I saw it in a weird cinema showing. Fascinating. It's so good. It's the only thing I can say that you should be wary of is the translation that I got, which was funny because it was a quote-unquote movie screening, but it actually just gave me like my original Anime Society vibes because it was in a pub
and they booked it out for a charity event, and then they played it on a projector screen. But they clearly just found some fan subs from way back in 2000, and then didn't like, and then put it on the most recent 4K rip, because there was some language mostly around the homosexual crossdresser, which doesn't fly in today's age. I can guess, you can guess which one it is. It begins with an F and it is about a bundle of sticks. And I was just like, but Japanese doesn't even have that word in their dictionary. So to put that in as an acceptable translation to what they're really saying doesn't fly. So my only advice to you, Ben, is to check the translation, because this is clearly that hadn't been updated.
The last time I watched that show was for our Christmas episode many a year ago. Sadly, do remember the same one being there. So
I am. But no, I feel that kind of pain as someone who has done a lot of translation work professionally, personally, somewhere in between the two. Like, it is always interesting when translators really try hard for an idiom, because that does make a translation feel more immediate, but it also can horribly date the project. Mm. And like, that's what sucks about watching Medalist's official subs. We mentioned that last episode, is that they will wholesale just like rip out entire conversations and replace them with Americanized or anglicized idioms that aren't really what they're saying, from what I understand. Like someone said, like, eto, and they translate like, don't mind if I do, and like, that's not that's the opposite of what that means.
yeah but that's because they're not, well, I mean, that's because they're not taking a translation, they're just taking the audio, the transcript from the English dub, like, that's all it is, where eto like is not there, so they've just made it match the mouth flaps.
The whole sort of scourge of a show not getting a true translation, or just getting like a closed caption and version of the English, is...
which is just Disney. It's annoying how it's just fucking Disney who does this. You'd think that they would care more about animation, but hey ho.
Maybe once upon a time. I mean, even when it was in Walt's era, they were anti-communist union busters. So it's a weird thing. I also have a best anime not from this year that I watched this year award. That's the last of my awards.
That's better than how I called it.
And that it's kind of a tie, because these two movies are really associated in my head. But it's Look Back. I watched Look Back about 4 months ago. Adored it. I already made the joking comment about loss and regret. I think this is just an amazing tone piece for just like, the road diverged in the yellow wood, and you have this like extremely powerful friendship, and then you see what would happen if it had never happened. Mm-hmm. And the degree to which you understand these characters and the degree to which their troubles and hopes feel real is great. And having watched that as a double feature with the case of Hannah and Alice, which is also about like kind of two weirdos meeting each other and finding a very like strangely strong and authentic feeling friendship. Both lovely. There's just such great shit. Especially if you wait 5 years and then watch it, and then you're like, hey guys, guess what?
Have either of you two got around to the collection of shorts based on his shorts yet? It's another one of those ones on my to-do list, which I expect to be good, but and that's the strange thing. I think sometimes if I expect something to be good, I'm less hurried to get to it, because I know it'll always be there. Whereas if something I'm unsure about, I'm more likely, oh, well, I better watch it now while I still have the interest, rather than it being this thing I have a sense that its quality will always be there.
My other thing is, if it's a movie, if it's not in the cinema, I am less likely to watch it. Which is a weird look back, and that other Tatsuki Fujimoto thing is both weren't in the cinema.
Yeah, they're both on Amazon at the moment.
Yeah. And what's the next one, Ben? On your list?
I think it's your manga.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. So, as always, I do my manga top five manga of the year. However, I was going through it, and I realized it's pretty boring, because It's going to be the same stuff. Last time I took off One Piece. This time I have not got any manga that I either mentioned before. Akane Banashee is still my favourite thing that I'm reading that isn't One Piece. Akane Banashee is getting an anime this year, so I'm very excited for you guys to all watch what I have been banging on about for years now. An honourable miss that just creeped in at number six was Itchy the Witch. Itchy the Witch is a shonen battler, but written in with a female like gaze. It's about a world full of magic but can only be acquired by women, and then this one guy acquires one of the most powerful magic and then becomes the first man to be a witch. And it's got Desecris, who's just this badass black lady, and I fucking love her. But number five, coming in strong, Monochrome Days. This is a slice of life anime manga about writing manga. This is very much how the sausage is being made. It goes through paneling. It goes through what makes a dynamic scene. It goes through, and then like where it's at now, it's going through serialization, and it's got two great cast characters who I really feel for. You really want to root for them. They're also not kids. They're office men. They're officers. Like, you know, they just are doing manga in their spare time because they love it as a hobby. Number four. Heisei Hanzai Haizanhei Sumire-chan, or in English, The Defeated Straggler of the Heisei Era, Sumire-chan. This is a comedy about a person who used to be in an idol group, and the cousin who's like into her, loves her, tries to get her to exist again by being a cosplayer. You know, like doing photo shoots and selling that cosplay stuff at Comic Case. So it's a bit of industrial know-how and talking about how you sell cosplay, which is different from Dress Up Darlings, how you make cosplay. And then on top of that, it's combined with really funny moments of Sumire-chan. She is a failed 30-year-old something who is getting drunk and working at a snack bar, and the fact that she's so crude. And then you get all the host of other casts, like her other former idol members, also come in. And they're also great and weird.
Sounds a similar vibe to Attack on Ovidio in a way.
Sure, I haven't watched it. this is... I don't think Attack on Ovidio is as crude as this one, though. This is very... I don't know. It's very funny. Then number three is The Creepy and the Freaky. It starts off with these cute, kind of like Animal Crossing characters. And there's this one person who owns a shop of scary stories, which are in these boxes. And so the premise at the beginning is that this toad called Grinnell comes into the shop, which is run by Mr. Bunny. And then Mr. Bunny goes, oh, you should have this story, and opens it up. And then it transforms into a different art style altogether. And it is a horror story, a small horror story about people in what you could consider to be our world. And then it moves on to the next story. But you realize pretty quickly that all of these stories are connected. I don't want to ruin it, but it's very interesting. It's pretty short right now as well. I think it's only been around for a year or so, I think. So, yeah, there's not many chapters. Number two, The War of the Adults, a comedy sci-fi manga about a person who writes a journal of what he believes should be a good person, then gets hit by a truck, saving a cat, and then wakes up 10 years later in the modern day as a adult, but it has been taken over by a organization called Garden. Everybody is watched by cameras, and then people can vote on a live stream as to whether they're doing good things or bad things, and if they do good things, then their rating as an adult gets higher and higher. So it's part comedy, it's part like 20th Century Boys level of mystery, and it's told in a way that's just really funny and always confuses me. Yeah, good stuff. And then number one is Bug Ego. This is the new manga by one, and then it's illustrated by this guy who I've not heard of, Kiyoto Shitara. It is about a kid who gets a notebook. And then in that notebook, he realizes that there are all these weird things that you can do kind of like a cheat code in real life. And it starts small and innocent, like you put 500 yen in a vending machine, you press a button three times, and then there's always going to be a bird poo that lands right next to you. And then that sort of starts then building up into weirder and stranger and odder mysteries. It's got this art style that I absolutely fucking love, where they have photorealistic stuff, they have CG stuff, they have hand-drawn stuff, all mixed together in this really bizarre, unsettling way. Main cast is like your classic one guy who's really smart and thinks he knows everything, and one guy who's really dumb and doesn't really know what's going on, but he just likes to hang out with this other guy. And then you've got the girl who's smart and knows what she's doing and actually has plans to do stuff, and it's fascinating. They're such a good trio.
Yeah, you've mentioned Bug Ego before on the cast. I'm not. Hopefully, it wasn't last year. Otherwise, this is going to be your bocce of manga.
It was. I checked. It was an honourable mention.
Ah, okay.
And I said one to watch because I don't know what it's like because I only read a chapter. Now there's about 13 chapters out, and I can confidently say it's really fucking good. And so yeah, that's my anime top five new things that I've been watching that I've been reading this year.
Now, speaking of new things, I think we were going to briefly touch upon the beginnings of the new season. Do you like to lead, Ben? I think this was
sure thing. I mean, this is at least for me a much richer and more promising season than the one before. Trigun, which is my cross to bear, pun intended.
Min's really liked Trigun.
I'm glad. she probably. I'm glad. Did she like the original anime?
I don't know.
Or has she watched it? Because I think that's
watched it. I think, but the way that she sees it is they're two different things.
Like, they are. I mean, they want to be, but it's the sort of thing with a remake where they're constantly telling you, like, "Hey, remember this? Also, we're doing it completely different." And fuck you. So it's kind of.
But that sounds interesting. I don't know. Like that. At least you're not getting the same story. You're getting something different. You might not like that story.
I'm getting a like ratified version of the same story, and it's getting on my nerves. Rad. But we will be talking about this a lot, even against my own best instincts. So we don't need to go into my perverse need to finish series that I am not enjoying and have not enjoyed from jump. I mean, a lot of adulthood is watching your childhood get ruined and realizing that things were kind of crap always, but the original Trigun I've rewatched, and besides the sex pest stuff, it's brilliant. And the current show does not really reach the same subtlety of theme, because I think that the creator got his brain melted by Marvel movies, which, whatever, we don't have to get into it, even though I just did. And Medalist, Frieren, so much stuff. I am going to go ahead and still bring up, you and I are polar opposites. Andy is throwing bucket after bucket of water on my enthusiasm, and it will not stop me. I think these characters are beautiful designs. They are funny. I think Suzuki is hilarious. I think the what's-her-face fucking... The classic, like, my neighbor Seki-kun, or like Sakamoto Desuka, or haven't you heard I'm Sakamoto, like this kind of like serious guy, and he's also just hilarious.
Tani-kun.
Yes. And like I said, they confess in the first episodes, they hold hands in the second episode, the third episode is out, and I will eat these words. I probably will eat these words. It's anime after all, and mangaka gotta eat. So they can't like kiss and get married. They have to either encounter stupid bullshit or just stop advancing their relationship, full stop. But for now, it is bright, it is lively, it is everything that I kind of hoped City would be. But you and I are polar opposites is telling a really good joke. City is telling a really good joke, and they're also juggling in your face while they're telling that joke, and you're like, can I? This doesn't translate well to a podcast. I'm trying to get Bass all the balls so I could be like, what was that? What was that joke? I didn't hear your punchline. What? So yeah, that's where I am.
This may be something you can either confirm or deny for me, Andy, but it really gives me the impression of that you and I. It really feels like it's gonna branch into a more ensemble piece, that's going to diverge from the central couple into a wider group of couples. Is that roughly the direction it's going?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
I'm fine with that. I'm 100% happy with that.
That's Caracana shit. I'm here for it. Sure, absolutely.
I am not a naysayer of You and I Are Polar Opposites. I think it's good. You and I Are Polar Opposites won an award, I believe, by Jump. I'm not quite sure. The award was Civilization in Jump Plus and a guaranteed anime.
Wow.
Which is an insane award to, like, gift.
Yeah.
Based off the strength of that one shot. I like Suzuki. I just find Tani just so, like, well, in the manga I found him, like, so emotionless. But actually in the anime they've done a better job of like, releasing some of his more embarrassing, like, softer sides.
Mm.
And so I will give the anime credit that, again, this is something that I didn't appreciate when I was reading it. So maybe my opinions of them will change.
So is he more internal, like entirely internal and not sharing? Because that's one of the things I like in the anime, is that he seems like he's all up in his head, but like she gets him to talk, which seems like a good mix of personalities.
Yeah, and like that does happen. I just feel that as character he doesn't develop. Mm. That's fine. That's who his character is, and that's also what Suzuki likes about him. So I can't complain too much. And then, as mentioned before, it moves into an ensemble cast. Now, there is some characters in the ensemble cast who I fucking adore and will go to, like, will die on the hill to protect. I'm excited. I'm glad that you're liking it.
Final question on that, Andy. Is it a technical one? Is it a four coma or is it a more...
No.
Okay. It reminded me a lot of an old show called Sorry Zuri Children, which is means something like literally like tedious children, which was a four panel gag manga about romances doing exactly the opposite of the Ben wants, that they just can't confess, that these increasingly more and more ridiculous things happen to stop them confessing. And it was very enjoyable as just a bunch of complete idiots who couldn't make their relationships work. It was had a huge ensemble cast, and I was sort of the feelings with this that it might be branching into a wider cast because it wanted to do comedy with more archetypes, but it sounds like it's more invested in actually exploring them emotionally.
I think I'm going to reserve some of my bigger problems with until the end of season wrap up, where I think we'll definitely talk about.
So what's the thing which you don't have reservations about, which you are loving so far this season?
I don't know about loving, but I'm going to, because this season is so jam-packed of like other top-tier anime, I'm just going to rep one that I feel has probably gone under everyone's radar. Could be wrong. I've never heard, not heard of any of you guys talking about it. But Journal with Witch.
Fuck's sake, I wrote like five paragraphs about this, Andy.
That's the one anime that Duncan won't stop talking about. Oh, you really don't read it, do you?
Well,
11 out of 10, no fucking notes.
Oh man, I love this podcast. What a good time.
only if you're clearly like, yeah, Journal with Witch. It's really good. I watched one episode and I thought it was very, very good. It's a fun.
It's not fun.
No, it's not.
It's a fun time. It's a fun time.
But it is a fun time watching it. I really like, it is about like a kid whose parents die in a car crash and then is basically been passed around by a family in a like a really devastating but also like really well done scene of this funeral scene where they're eating like funeral food to mourn the mum, and all that they are talking about is who's going to look after this kid. Asa Takumi, and she's sitting across from this other woman who like Maiko Kodai, so unlike the rest of the family, and then speaks in a very loud tone to like Asa and says like, I hate your mum, but these people all fucking suck. Do you want to get out of here? And she was like, yes. And that was such a great scene. I'm really invested in this anime, and I will keep on watching it. It's a shame no one's told me about it.
Yes, because if someone did tell you about it, they'd probably say like it is...
I mean, I wouldn't be reading.
Yeah.
Because as we all know, I don't read the Slack.
which is ironic because it's a show which really cares about words. The aunt, Mariko, is an author. The funeral scene Andy describes is a lot of what goes on there is it's concerned with how they can't actually address her. They are all talking around her, as Andy says. They're not talking to her, they're talking about her, and how the only person who's prepared to talk to her and listen to her is not necessarily one who had a good relationship with her mother and father, but despite that is willing to just make this bridge to this person and to give her the opportunity to say something if she wants to, or even to be silent if she wants to, just giving her the license to just be whoever she was at that moment. She's speaking to her ex-lover about the will and how to execute that, and she gives this little anecdote about Asa. She's saying she's not upset, but she sleeps all the time, spends half of it sleeping, and just this sense of her quiet exhaustion. And as Andy mentioned earlier, talking about grief and about is not something shows will tend to do, and especially not in a way where the death itself doesn't really have a presence within the show. It's more these two different, very different people trying to reach an understanding and a compromise of how they live together. It's been thoroughly excellent so far. It hasn't put a foot wrong. And so, watch it, please, Ben. Go on. You make both me and Andy happy.
It's on the real list.
But not the really real list, which is that it's the you've got the list, get the real list, know, and the real real list.
I know that this is the fate of a liar. I live with it.
What would you possibly recommend from this season now, Duncan? What's your one?
Obviously, since you stole my outstanding anime, I'll talk about, I'll say like the other show I'd recommend from this season is Fate Strange Fake, which gaslit me for about 3 years. We had the episode zero, I think, in 2023. Then we had episode one earlier last year, and finally we get episode two, three, and four, and so on and so forth this year, and it is very dumb, very fun. It's the Fate franchise is this labyrinthian mix of a visual novel and gacha game, but this is a version of it written by the author of Bakano as an April Fool's Day. It is irreverent. The problem with shows like Mainline Fate is you have so much accumulated grit and lore over time that it's impossible to come in as a newcomer and take any joy in it. But this has none of that. It's just like, here's our setup. We're going to have all these famous historical figures go toe-to-toe. It really plays with the idea of what defines these people. Like, is someone their history or their stories? Is someone their life or their legacy? Without getting too heavy-handed. And this is a season with a fair few high-budget action shows, but this is the one which is the most joyful action. And I thoroughly recommend it as just a, I just want to watch things go boom.
Yeah, have you heard about the controversy that came out about the Crunchyroll upload, though?
Go on.
It's apparently uploading unfinished versions compared to the TV ad or the Amazon Prime version.
Sounds like Crunchy.
Crunchy do seem to be letting things slip with both their subs and the raw footage they're using, just to make sure they get it out quickly. So many pirate versions of shows are just, they rip the Crunchy subs and up it goes. And that's they're competing with instantaneous piracy. It's not, there's no bespoke typesetting going on. The thing which matters to them is be first, and then the rest is irrelevant.
Yeah, generally speaking, the reward is not there to really do a high quality streaming release these days. It feels like we talked about the awful dub titles and stuff. It's just the proposition's not there, and I don't know.
It's an accident, and it's happening more and more. Probably because
it's happening more and more once all the Crunchyroll staff left, and they were given all their roles were given to the Funimation staff, because Japanese corporations respect tenure and legacy a lot more than they do demonstrated ability, which is kind of the sad thing is that all the right stuff people gone, all the old guard Crunchyroll people gone, and I do think that there is just kind of like these filthy unwashed anime fans will watch whatever the fuck we put out there. We can have AI translate it, and maybe they'll get angry, but we'll still take a couple episodes to change direction, and that's money saved. and fuck them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's hard not to be bleak about that.
No, I definitely agree with you there, Ben. It's definitely a case of where else are they going to go apart from nowhere? It's Crunchyroll or the High Road. So they've got a monopoly.
We're at the strange point where we're getting some shows on both Netflix and Crunchy at the same time, which I don't entirely understand, but...
Yeah, getting release license versus, like, long-term, like, Netflix getting free run a year after it's kind of made its impact. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that's just the quote-unquote anime boom that we're going through now, that they're just trying to keep it booming, keep it...
Well, Crunchyroll has certainly both grown massively and consolidated its catalogue in the past, post-pandemic. Like, they've released subscriber accounts, subscriber numbers occasionally. Crunchyroll had 3 million subscribers at the turn of the pandemic, and now they have 17 million. So it's obviously pretty explosive growth for them. And whether that many people were also watching anime in other ways before then, I actually feel I doubt it. I think they probably don't even see Netflix as competition. I think they see Netflix as actually acting as a booster for them. People will watch
pipeline.
People will watch something like Demon Slayer or, as you say, Frieren on Netflix, but it'll be a season behind Crunchyroll, and then they'll come to Crunchyroll to get the latest and the greatest.
Yeah, just that complacency is hard for me to watch. That's just the main issue for me.
I bought a new TV the other day, and it had a Crunchyroll button.
I think that was a Sony TV, right? Which is probably explains it because they own a large proportion of Crunchy.
Yeah, Sony.
yeah. Do we have anything else, or should we wrap this up?
No, I think that's it. Next week we'll be doing our beginning of the season, or rather midpoint of the season episode. And yeah, I'm excited to see what our full breadth of opinion is about all the shows airing right now. And yeah, in the meantime, rate, review, and subscribe to us on the podcast platform of your choice. Find us on Facebook, search for Keyframes Podcast. Find us on Blue Sky, Keyframes Pod. Email us questions, keyframespodcast@gmail.com. And most of all, tell a friend.
Not just any friend. I would tell the friend who loves a good ranking of kings.
Why not a rating
of kings? I think we
yeah, you have to rate those kings rather than rank them. It's a much kinder
Richard,
way.
Richard the Lionheart, 7.5. George the Fifth, 4.
No, I give Richard the Lionheart 9 out of 10. I give, frankly, Ben, you could also just rating of kings could just be fake.
See, that's what I've heard. I have avoided Fate because I do think it is, like, I would just get driven crazy. Like I mentioned that Julius Caesar history anime, I would go crazy. Like, I'm worried about watching that because, like, I know Caesar's life intimately, and every change they're going to make, why'd they do that? And so if they have, like, kawaii femboy Jack the Ripper, I think I might jump off a bridge. I don't know. I don't know what I have in my...
As far as I'm aware, that's not the case.
I don't know.
I mean, Jack the Ripper, the only... We have seen Jack the Ripper once
Jack the Ripper
in the show. And Jack the Ripper was a pocket watch. Literally.
How is this a pitch for me to watch the end?
Jack the Ripper does exist, yeah.
No, Jack the Ripper doesn't exist. Jack the Ripper is a conglomeration of stories.
Oh, we're getting Jack the Ripper theories here. I like this.
From Hell being a good comic but a terrible film.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what Golden Kamuy does too. Is like, oh, what if Jack the Ripper, the murders stopped because he went to Japan and killed a bunch of prostitutes there instead? Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, cool. Thanks, well, Golden Kamuy.
But also, like you said, Jack the Ripper in Fate is a lolly girl with a thong.
Frantically trying to think of a Jack the Stripper. There we go. Okay, got it. It's good. It's good, guys.
Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.